With over 52,000 self-storage facilities in the U.S., this country is home to 90% of the self-storage industry found in the world. You may have noticed more and more mini garage-type spaces popping up near you. They've hit rural Wisconsin and the largest cities, leaving us to wonder, do we have too much stuff? Nancy Wong is chair and a professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Nancy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you, Judy.
So this is really an interesting topic to me. I've definitely noticed that I see them so much more in the U.S. than in other countries. And with so much of the self-storage industry in the United States, with your background in consumer behavior and consumption habits, are you surprised that that's the case?
Well, actually, to be honest, not at all. I think it is a combination of our habits as well as I think what has been happening in the general economic environment that this country is facing.
And when did self-storage units for consumers, for average people, first start being available?
Well, I think it has actually been around for a while, but then, I don't know the exact time when it came into, popular use. But I do believe that there is always a continuous need for something like that as we go through life transitions.
Mm-hmm. And there's life transitions, and then there's also just wanting to hold on to stuff, and we'll talk about that more. But as someone who studies consumer behavior and consumption, when did you first start kind of zeroing in on the concept of self-storage?
Well, I think it has to do with, my interest in, materialism and how people form attachments to their possessions.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those attachments that we feel to things?
Well, I guess, humans are very, I think it is important to us to sort of like define and understand our world through consumption because we need to consume in order to survive, first of all, and but as, we become a more industrialized and sophisticated culture, we get to own more and more things and consume more and more things. And it comes to actually become a very central part of our sort of meaning and well-being in life. Hmm. And perhaps in this country more so than almost anywhere else.
So what are some of the common reasons that people are taking that step of not just saving things, but actually renting additional space outside of their homes to store things?
Well, I think it's because of, again, I think it is such an important part of our life that, I guess most people don't think about the fact that things are not just things once we own them. They actually occupy a special place, and it has special meaning for us. I think from the perspective of my studies, we think about how our possessions actually establish our identity, how we are distinctive from others. It provides us with a sense of security and gives us a sense of our own history and a sense of continuity. And, how it defines our relationships and a sense of belonging to others. And, how we actually take pride and, in our possessions and also how it makes us become more effective in our daily lives, whether we become a better cook because of the latest gadget that we have or, how we actually communicate how important someone is by making something special for them, like knitting that special Christmas sweater. So I think it means so much to, us in terms of possessions. It's never just one simple thing. So the fact that it has such deep meaning, it also means that it is impossible to let go.
We're talking with Nancy Wong. She's chair and a professor in the Consumer Science Department in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. And we're talking about the tremendous rise in the self-storage industry and why we save things and what we're putting in those units. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you rent a storage unit? What led to that? Was it a downsizing move, maybe divorce, lifestyle change that made you consider getting one? one. And do you see it as a long-term or a short-term solution for having more stuff than you have room for? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Nancy, you study consumerism and consumption. Are there particular groups of people that you see as being more likely to be savers of stuff than others?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are actually any number of psychological and behavioral scales that researchers often use to actually measure these sort of individual level differences. And you know, I guess you can think about it from occupying the entire spectrum of people who form normal attachments, like the average person. It's a rare individual that doesn't actually have an attachment to things. But, you know, of course, I think you can go to the other extreme spectrum to the, you know, what people would call hoarding behavior. So that actually is probably taking this very natural tendencies that we have to the extreme, and that could happen.
I read a bunch of different articles in preparing for this segment, and a lot of the people that the different journalists talked to talked about saving these things that were from their children's growing up period, you know, report cards and pictures, but also from people's own childhoods from, you know, maybe 40, 50, 60 or more years ago. And many of the people expressed this sense of wanting to be able to pass things on to their children, grandchildren. But there seems to be, in recent generations, kind of, I don't want to say rejection in a bad way, but they are trying to live more minimalistic lives. So it seems like there's a real cultural clash happening right now.
There is. And I think some of it is also due to economic necessities, because I've also just remember reading about the fact that home ownership rates is in the 30-year low among the millennials. So we are much less likely to own our own homes. And if we do actually live in a rental space, chances are they are going to be smaller. So all of that actually compels us towards living in a much more minimalistic way. So you're right. I think it is an upcoming potential cultural clash here.
And let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Mike in Sun Prairie is up. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just in the middle of reading out my double car garage here, and I've been threatening to nail the Christmas supplies for the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm finally doing it today. There are like 13 totes full of Christmas supplies, and I said, we've got to do something, so I've started doing it today.
Wow.
And I got the feeling I'm going to get chewed pretty good when the headquarters people come home.
We'll just guess who the headquarters people are, Mike. But what, you know, what was kind of that switch being flipped for you that you went from having this stuff to saying, you know, we've got to pare down here?
Because it's getting to the point where I can't get the vehicles in the garage. I can't get the rest of the stuff in the garage. Mm. And, you know, it's funny because her mother grew up in a place that was devastated by wars. And her mom just, they essentially lost everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be part of it with the whole bunch, too. So who knows?
That's really interesting, Mike. And Nancy, I know that there's often been reference to people who grew up during the Depression, that they have a really hard time letting go of something because they can't shake that feeling that I might need this someday.
Yes, and also it's giving up a part of your personal history as well. If that thing is gone, I mean, I guess a lot of the times we tend to attach all these, they serve as memories for an experience that we have gone through, and getting rid of it means that there is no trace of it anymore. So I think that really becomes a very difficult part of letting go. It's really hanging on to that memory.
Thanks for that call, Mike. We're talking with Nancy Wong. She is in the Consumer Science Department in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. We're talking about the rise in self-storage facilities and why there's such a demand to store our stuff. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a storage unit? What led to you renting one? And if you have a storage unit, or maybe you've managed to break the habit, tell us the process that you went through. Have you seen more self-storage units popping up in your area? And if, like our last caller, you just feel like you have too much stuff, what's your plan for paring down? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. We're continuing our discussion with Nancy Wong, chair and professor in the Consumer Science Department in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about renting extra storage space? Is it an option you've considered or maybe taken advantage of? Do you feel like as Americans, we have a tendency to hold on to things too long? Call 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Nancy, the average monthly cost of a storage unit is about $90, which isn't cheap. Do we know if this is a move that people are making, thinking that it's going to be short term, just in a transition, or are they planning on this long term because they really don't want to have to deal with getting rid of those items?
I would honestly say that when most people started out, they thought of it as a temporary solution to either something that you know, as they go through life's transition. And sometimes I think it ended up taking longer than they expected, as in moving into a house that they have intended to move into. Or, you know, something else happened along the way, and it upsets their plan of, you know, moving into that particular transition. So I think it was probably meant to be a temporary solution that just take on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones, and Brian in Madison is up. Hi, Brian.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
My wife and I definitely fit into that category where we had expected to move into a house and rented a smaller apartment and started a house search, and in the market simply were not able to find something that we could afford, and so have had a storage unit now for quite a bit longer than we thought we would.
So initially you thought you would put some stuff in storage just until you had a house, and now you're finding a house that's affordable or one that fits your needs isn't happening. So at what point, Brian, would you say, you know, maybe we need to get rid of some stuff, or are you just going to keep it in there kind of as long as it needs to be?
Well, the interesting thing is we really did get rid of a lot of stuff. We don't have a lot of things in that storage unit that I would consider to be extraneous or, you know, memories that we just can't part with. It's really pared down to, you know, about 800 square feet worth of possessions and a couple canoes. So I don't feel like we're holding on to things because we can't part with them. We have a fairly minimal set of possessions that we can't find a place for, and we don't want to have to replace them all if we, you know, hopefully when we do find that place.
All right.
But I could see how somebody in that situation would end up with a long-term storage unit and not able to find the right space.
Thanks for that call, Brian, at 800-642-1234. Let's go next to Lester in Madison. Hi, Lester.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So my comment is, my parents grew up in the Depression, and I basically did a lot of my adult growing up as a hippie living on a commune in the country. And I have a lot of stuff.
And what kind of stuff is it, Lester?
I have all kinds of stuff. I have lumber. I have tools. I have books. I had vinyl records. I still have some. But I guess the point I want to make is I found myself going back to the storage unit to bring things back home because I needed them. I think that the idea of holding on to things that might be useful isn't such a bad idea. We have such a throwaway society. People don't fix things anymore. That's one thing that I try to do. Sometimes I have something that I haven't figured out how to fix yet, but I will.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Lester. And Nancy, Lester's call kind of made me think about the fact that it seems like there are a few different themes to why people save things. And one of them, like Lester said, was he doesn't know when he's going to need these things, so he doesn't want to get rid of it and have to replace it. I think there's also, you know, and I will say it's on a much smaller scale, more like a couple drawers than a storage unit, but there'll be a project that I think I'm going to take on sometime. I think, oh, well, you know, I don't want to get rid of that because I'd really like to do that project. And it seems like it's this idea that at some unknown point in the future, these things are going to be needed or wanted, and we're trying to avoid that moment where we think, oh, I just wish I hadn't gotten rid of that.
Yes, I completely agree with you in the sense that I think that is also a very natural instinct, and I completely agree with the fact that we are becoming too much of a throwaway society. So there is actually that push and pull between these two. So, you know, And there is also the other culture that has emerged that kind of speaks to some of this in the sense that, you know, you should just rent something that you are going to use for a short period of time, like rent a runway, you know, beg, borrow, and steal, whatever the case may be, as opposed to having to own something or you know, using a car service as opposed to owning a car. So they are actually also increasingly more market solutions that actually try to reduce ownership of things.
Mm.
So, you know, here's a whole other culture again.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And another kind of contrast that I thought of when I was reading up on this topic is that a lot of the newer storage unit facilities are not being built from the ground up for that purpose. They're actually repurposing things like former malls. And the idea that a place that used to be where people bought stuff is now where people put the stuff that they've bought just kind of blows my mind.
Yes, it does. It is really fascinating. I think that's why I've become so fascinated with the subject, because there's so much complex, I think, emotions and motivations and psychologies behind it.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones, and Tyler in Madison is up. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. What did you have to say?
Oh, well, that's tough to follow up everything right there. One question I had, though, is even though this seems to be like something that people want, more storage, how come it's still so expensive?
So why, if there's such a demand, why isn't it driving, or if why isn't the availability of it driving down the price?
Yes.
All right. And Nancy, do we know what kind of directs the availability and cost of this kind of service? Because it seems like for the people who are renting out the space, they have really minimal overhead.
That's true. But then at the same time, I guess, you know, I think our prices are really determined by supply and demand. So unfortunately, if the demand is keeping up as what we expect that it seems to be going, I don't see prices coming down anytime soon.
And Tyler, have you used a storage facility yourself?
No, I have not. I am actually planning on to, though.
Oh, and what's the motivation for you to rent one?
My motivation is because Madison has been kind of a home base for me. I've lived here my entire life, and now I'm going backpacking, and I need, like, you know, to keep my couch and my bed here safe.
So for you, it's actually replacing your residence. It's not in addition to your residence.
No, it is not. It is replacing my residency here.
Really interesting. And so, Nancy, that's one that we haven't really talked about. I mean, we've talked about, you know, people using it in addition to where they're living. But for some people who are making a big life change, like Tyler, you know, it can give you that freedom to say, I'm leaving the life I'm living right now, but I don't want to totally close the door on it either.
That's true, but it still qualifies as life transition. So I guess if we keep it general enough, it still fits in that category. But It is interesting, though. How long does Tyler intend to go camping or, you know, traveling around the world? So it could go from a very temporary solution to a long-term solution.
You never know. Tyler might end up living wherever he lands. Thanks for that call, Tyler. And let's go next to Karen in Rice Lake. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. Very interesting conversation. Often some of the people that I've worked with are using it not because of an unwanted transition. They are homeless, not moving from place to place, but simply have no place, cannot afford a place. And so that becomes the only place left to store anything that matters. And not even saying that they're not living there from time to time, but it is not a wanted transition, it is sometimes a necessity.
And we're running a little short on time, Karen, so I want to give Nancy a chance to respond. So for some people, a storage unit might be the only way to hold on to both things of necessity and sentimental things.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And sometimes it is just sort of, I think, a delay tactic to sort of avoid having to be the ones who give up on something that you're very attached to. I guess I have the personal experience of having someone send it to me long distance, something that they have held on to for the last 50 years. And it is something that I know they cannot let go, so they would give it to somebody to dispose of it for them.
Right. Right. So they don't have to do it themselves. Well, Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. Really interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me. This is really great feedback from the listeners as well, too. I enjoy hearing their stories.
Great. Well, expect to see it showing up in your research. Nancy Wong is chair and a professor in the Consumer Science Department in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. She joined us to talk about the rise of self-storage facilities and what it might say about our consumer habits as a country. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, there's a long-standing rivalry between Wisconsin and Minnesota, but which state's residents are faring better? We'll take a look at what the data shows, and we'll ask for your input as well.